This is Evolutionary Radio. We are coming at you live from the Evolutionary Radio headquarters. As always, this is your host, Trevor Kuritzen. Joining me is Steve Smee.
Yes, good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing out there?
Matt, how's it over in Ontario?
Doing awesome, buddy. Ready to go. Haven't been on in a while, so I'm ready for an exciting show tonight.
Yeah, we missed you. You had some like crazy storms. You lost electricity or something?
Yeah, only up here, buddy, did we get snowstorms in the middle of April. It's a joke. And then yesterday we're out wearing shorts. So you never know.
Yeah. Steve, do you want to go ahead and introduce topic number one?
The first topic I want to talk about, we like to do a relationship question on the show. And this is a really good one. And I'm curious to hear you guys' thoughts on fighting in relationships and fighting in marriage. So I want to ask Trevor first, because Trevor, you're so young. I can imagine you for sure fighting with your ex-girlfriends. You come off as someone who wouldn't, which tells me that you probably did, to the point where like you're yelling at them and screaming at them. So I'm just curious, you know, what are your thoughts on fighting, and have you fought a lot? Because you know, you come across as someone who wouldn't fight, which tells me you probably are probably did.
Well, so am I wrong? I never yell. Like, I never raise my voice. But I think it's normal to fight, especially if it's someone you care about. Like, Steve, let's take us for example. We're good friends, but we argue all the time. But we only argue because we value each other's opinion. And it's easier not to care than to say something that might start an argument. You know what I mean? Like, if someone's doing something stupid, I don't care about that person. I just let them do it and be like, hey, whatever. But if it's someone I care about, I would tell them, hey, what you're doing is stupid. You're wasting your time. And then they would get defensive and there might be an argument. But I'm only doing that because I care about them and I care about their time or, you know, I care about the outcome of whatever they're doing. So I think fighting is normal. I wouldn't use the term fighting. I would say arguments is normal. It's just having healthy arguments, you know? I think it's normal, but I don't think you should let it escalate and become manipulative and things like that. Like, I'm sure Matt will talk about him and his wife probably getting arguments all the time.
Yeah, I want to see what Matt says, but I want to hear what you have to say first. Like, your last couple of relationships, how often did you guys fight?
I wouldn't say fight, but we get in arguments about things all the time, especially when it comes to like nutrition or training, because I normally would date girls that are into the same things as I am.
So you'd argue about egg whites or no egg whites?
Yeah, things like that. You know, like, well, it's like me and you. You're a big advocate of intermittent fasting, and I think it has its place, but I think it's kind of just like the latest fad, right? So just like things like that. You know what I mean? Like, she would be doing some like grain-free diet and I'd be like, okay, that's stupid. Why can't you eat rice? Like, she's like, well, prehistoric humans didn't grow up eating grains. We only have been cultivating grains the last 10,000 years. I'm like, prehistoric humans weren't trying to be as muscular and as low body fat as possible. Prehistoric humans are trying to live. Prehistoric humans, like, you know, like that argument makes no sense. And then she'd be like, yeah, well, we shouldn't be eating grains. I'm like, why shouldn't we be eating grains? She'd be like, well, look at how many people are gluten sensitive. That just tells you we shouldn't be eating wheat. I'm like, only people are gluten sensitive here in North America because of the Roundup we spray on the wheat. Go to Europe and everyone eats wheat, no problem. So we just get in arguments like that, right? And it's not, no one's right or no one's wrong. It would just be heated conversations, I guess, is the way I would phrase it.
So you've never had a fight with a girl, like where she's yelling at you, telling you to go to hell, storming out of your house, telling you to fuck off? You never had that?
I don't think so, man.
It must be a Canadian thing. Matt, how about you? How often do you fight? How often do you F-bombs like, the thing
about us Canadians, Steve, is like we wouldn't let it get to that point. You know, like before one of us would start screaming, we'd hug each other and then say sorry and have some maple syrup and Canada Dry ginger ale.
I mean, to have an argument that Steve's talking about, like where you're yelling and storming out of the house, I mean, we've been married 12 years. I think that's probably happened 3 times ever. And because that requires something serious to happen, you know, for it to get to that point. But I mean, so I'm too old for drama now. Like, I'm just not going to argue. But the disagreements that we'll have, I mean, we'll disagree about stuff all the time. And, you know, now it's typically around like parenting. We won't agree on what the right thing to do is. So like my little guy, like he's 9 and he's pretty intense. So like when he argues with his brother, who's, you know, 18 months older than him, he'll turn into like this wrestler. Like he loves to watch wrestling. So he turns into that guy and he starts acting like him and talking like him. And they're actually about the same size. So it's kind of funny, but at the same time, you know, you're not a wrestler, you're a 9-year-old boy. So like, we'll argue about that. You know, we'll be like, well, he can't be watching any more wrestling TV for now. Or, you know, he can't be playing any video games that are like wrestling games because he thinks he's in the game. And, you know, things like that we'll go back and forth on. But it's typically, you know, arguing because it's anytime it's the same thing over and over and over again, you're going to disagree. You're going to argue, you know, you're going to get bored. Things like that are going to happen, you know? So when you live with somebody, whether it's, you know, your spouse, your significant other, or even just a friend, you know, you're going to argue the more that you're with that person. Cause at first, you know, you won't notice it, but then, you know, later on, you're going to be like, man, you chew really loud and it really pisses me off. Things like that are going to drive me nuts after a while. But I mean, it's natural to argue and disagree. I think, you know, the more that you're around somebody, it's just a matter of, you got to dial it down. You know, you got to know the right time, like Trevor said, to prevent it from escalating to that point that it gets out of control. Cause that's when people are emotional. They say things they don't want to say and they do things they don't want to do. And then you always regret it in the end.
Yeah. Like going back to my example, if we got in like a heated argument, I'd be like, okay, long story short, it's just more rice for me and more vegetables for you. And then she'd be like, you're right. I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna have a bowl of rice. You have some celery sticks. Everyone's happy. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes that's why people who are in the same profession have a hard time getting along, because they have this, you know, disagreement about. But here's the key though, as a guy, is you have to be very careful what you say, because women will remember everything. And saying the wrong thing can really damage things. Like, so as a guy, it's sometimes hard just to keep your mouth shut, but it's better to, and just kind of release the situation. I think both ends, to avoid fighting, you have to find a balance in your life, and you have to get the baby batter out of your system. Whatever you have to do, exercise obviously is the best thing you can do. Whatever it takes, meditation, yoga, whatever, you guys have to have a strategy to do that instead of taking out your anger on each other. So just be careful as a guy, because women will say stuff to us all the time out of emotion, and you can't really worry about what they say. We're not geared to pay attention to what women tell us. But women are geared to pay attention to what we tell them. So if you tell them the wrong thing, if you, you know, say, insult them in the wrong way, it can completely destroy things, because women emotionally attach to us. So that's a really good way to screw up a relationship or a marriage. So just be careful what you say. And I don't know. I mean, this is a good topic. Maybe we'll get back to it next week.
Well, I got one quick question for you, Steve. Your new girlfriend that you're, you know, head over heels for, have you guys gotten in like a serious fight yet?
Oh, yeah.
It must be an American thing.
Yeah, I mean, big time. Yeah, I mean, big time. Shit thrown around and stuff. Absolutely. I don't think. I don't know. But it's you know, absolutely.
What was the topic of the last fight?
Topic of the last fight was just some dumb shit, like what Matt was saying. Just you know, being negative and you know, being kind of like getting an attitude and being a bitch, basically. And I basically put my foot down and she didn't like that. So then it escalated, and then, you know, that's what happens. It blew up. And, but I mean, like I said, it wouldn't have blown up if, you know, both parties were balanced at the time, but because both parties were unbalanced, it blew up, it escalated. So, yeah, that's what happened. So, but you have to find out a way. This is why we should talk about this topic again next week, but we need to figure out a way to kind of diffuse the situation. And, but we'll get back to it next week because we've got to move on. I'm curious to hear about Matt's fights and how he de-escalate. I don't know. Do we have time for Matt to tell us?
We can do less.
Yeah, Matt, you said there was three major fights. How did you de-escalate it? Was it a situation where you both kind of spent the night in a different house or something? And then
That only happened once, but the way when it gets to be that serious, you need the time. I think that's the only way to de-escalate it, because like my nature is to fix it right away. And I don't know if that's typical of guys, but I feel like girls want to be left alone and guys want to talk about it. But that's the issue, right? So I'd be like, oh, you know, let's talk, let's fix it, blah, blah, blah. And she'd be like, nope, just leave me alone, I don't want to talk. So I think, you know, in those scenarios, after time, it kind of cools off a bit, and then you're able to talk. You can't try to fix it when everybody's emotional, because it won't work. So, I mean, that's really the only way. And, you know, the thing is, you have to, when you're in some type of argument like that, unless it's completely one-sided, you got to take some ownership of things you've done wrong or things you've said wrong, even just during the fight. Because if you don't, you know, it's going to be even worse, and, you know, you're just going to be defensive and everything else. But I think, you know, it really does just take time to let it cool down. And then you got to, you know, kind of talk about it.
If you're early in a relationship, go guys, especially Trevor, guys, Trevor age and stuff. If you do not put your foot down, a woman will just gradually walk over you over time. So you have to stand up for yourself, but you have to do it in a nice way and an alpha way. You can't do it, you know, by being an asshole and being abusive and being verbally abusive or physically abusive, obviously, you know, because that's a beta. That's what betas do. So you got to do it in an alpha way. So you put your foot down, she takes the hint, and then hopefully in the future, when she's trying to pick a fight with you, she'll realize, you know what? This isn't worth it. I'm gonna de-escalate it and go a different direction. So, but this is a good topic. We'll definitely talk about it in future podcasts. Maybe Trevor, in a year from now, he'll tell us about his first fight. So,
I'll tell you right now, I'm gonna win it too.
I'm sure you will, for sure. You strike me as that. It's always the quiet ones. You gotta watch out for them. So next topic is, this is a question that kind of drives me crazy. And maybe because I'm American, you guys are Canadian, you guys can kind of de-escalate this question. But this is a question we get on the forums maybe a couple times a week, and it kind of drives me crazy. It's, how should I train while I'm on steroids? And let me just say first, the reason it kind of annoys the shit out of me is, before you hop on steroids, you should already know how to train, and you should already be getting results. You don't just hop on steroids and then be like, you know what? How am I supposed to train? But then you get the people who are just like, well, because I'm on steroids, maybe I should do something different while I'm training. So I kind of see that perspective, but I don't know. It kind of annoys me because, I weight trained for 13 years before I ever touched steroids, and I tried all kinds of different ways to weight train. And I look back and tell myself during that 13 years, man, I used to train like sometimes like some of my workout strategies were so fucking dumb. Some of my workout strategies were good. Some were bad. Some were average. So, I mean, you've got to try different things and figure out what works for you. And then use steroids as icing on the cake. I don't think you should just hop on steroids and then ask, how should I train? So, am I being a little, bit of a brat on that? Or do you guys kind of see my perspective?
Okay, so I think a lot of young guys, they think that steroids are going to totally change the thing. You know, it's going to almost like enter them into this world of Narnia, and you know, there's going to be fairies floating around, and you're almost going to enter like the world of Adam and Eve where everything is perfect. All steroids do is they elevate muscle protein synthesis. So what happens in our steroid cycle? You have a higher rate of muscle protein synthesis. So your body repairs and builds muscle at a faster rate. So because of that, you can train slightly more frequently. But the problem is steroids don't increase collagen synthesis and they don't speed up the recovery of your central nervous system. So your muscles recover faster, but your joints and ligaments don't, and your central nervous system doesn't. So as a general rule, your training really shouldn't change that much, whether you're on cycle or off cycle. You're going to have a slightly better recovery ability when you're on cycle, but you'll also be stronger. Your workouts will be harder on your body to recover from. So it's almost like a wash. So I would say if you're training like 5 days per week off cycle, on cycle, you can maybe bump that up to 6. You can maybe stick with 5 days a week, but then maybe 2 of those days do AM, PM workouts, something like that. But I mean, nothing really changes, you know, basically you're just going to get better results. You really shouldn't change much when it comes to your training, your diet, your over-the-counter supplements. Like, you really got to think of this stuff in big world picture. All that's going to happen is that your muscle protein synthesis is going to be elevated. Matt, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I think what Trevor just said about this alternate universe, I think that's exactly it. I think this question is asked a lot by guys that are inexperienced, or maybe it's their first cycle and they're expecting, everything's different now. All of a sudden I'm going to be like the Incredible Hulk and I can do things that I've never been able to do. And that's not really how it works. The only time I could see it changing would be, say, you're the guy that's that 15% body fat right on that nose. And you really want to get big, but you're thinking, I got to cut a little bit of fat. So you decide naturally you're going to cut down a bit. So you do that. You're doing a lot of cardio. You're cutting down your body fat. You get down to say 12%, and now you want to add muscle. Your goals are changing. So you decide to hop on cycle then. Maybe you're going to change your training a bit that way. You're going to do less cardio. You're going to do more weight training. That's the only exception I really see. But as a general rule, we've kind of said it before, what works off cycle is going to work on cycle. It's just going to work a little bit better. So I would continue to do, the training that you're doing. If you're all of a sudden able to do a lot more training, then you probably weren't doing enough when you were off. You probably weren't motivated enough. Maybe your training wasn't intense. Maybe you were just lazy, maybe steroids are what's making you motivated. I don't know. But yeah, I think honestly, just stick to what you're doing. And as you increase your weight and everything, just increase slowly so you don't hurt yourself, because, it's real easy to hurt yourself when you're in the gym mentally, physically, you're seeing results, you're all pumped up and you just want to go crazy. And that's never going to work out. When you're trying to do something long term, when you act like that short term, it's always going to come back to bite you. So yeah, I'd stick to what works for you and, learn what works for your, your body and your training style.
I'll say one more thing and then Matt, I'll say one more thing and we'll let Steve go. And then Matt, you can introduce topic number three. So the unknown is exciting. You know, if you've never used steroids before, it's exciting to, you know, think about what they're going to do and everything, but they're really nothing magic. And the best example I can give you is smoking cigarettes. You know, I remember being in high school and, you know, you're not supposed to smoke cigarettes because you're not 18, but then, you know, you're 15 and one of your buddies has an older brother who buys you guys some cigarettes and you smoke. And I remember being 15 and smoking my first cigarette and being like, that's it? Like, this is what all the hype was about? I mean, didn't really do anything for me. It kind of gave me a headache. It's kind of a lunch bag letdown. Same thing happened when I smoked pot for the first time. I was like, really? This is what all the fuss is about? Like, it's not that exciting. But the unknown and thinking about how amazing and how great it's going to be, that was exciting and that was interesting. So same with steroids. You know, so many people are disappointed after running their first steroid cycle because they think shoving a needle in their butt is going to turn them into Ronnie Coleman. It's really not. I mean, performance enhancing drugs don't do as much as people think. I mean, me, Steve, and Matt, we have no hidden agenda here. We're not trying to let down anyone's dreams. Like, we're not against steroids. We talk about steroids on every single podcast. We're just trying to be almost like that father figure and tell you the real world results and the real world aspect of it all. Steroids don't do as much as people think. Steve?
Well, the ironic thing about steroids is that they're inflammatory and they also will cause you to have a greater risk for injury. So this idea that steroids help you recover and repair and stuff is just not the case. And in some cases, like using steroids, tren, testosterone, Anadrol, a lot of things that cause water retention or androgenic side effects can affect your sleep. You affect your sleep negatively, that's going to hurt your recovery. And that's going to help hurt your repair. So you're not going to be able to repair from your workouts. So that's kind of the ironic thing. And that's why when you're new to working out, you should definitely not hop on steroids. You really need to build a proper base. You really need to work out for at least 10 or 15 years before you start touching steroids. By no means should you touch them until then, because you have to mature physically. And also remember, your brain does not mature until you're 25 years old. So using steroids when you're under 25 makes absolutely no sense, because now you're destroying your reproductive health in the process. So, you know, these are the things that you have to understand. And another kind of thing that ties into this is people that think they can just run steroids and gain 10, 15 pounds. The answer is yes, you can gain 10, 15 pounds, but that's not quality muscle mass. That's not quality lean muscle mass. The reality is that you're going to have to gain 1 to 2 pounds of lean muscle mass per year to achieve the kind of results that you're looking for. So it's a long-term type of thing, and steroids can kind of help you along, but they're not something that you just take for 12 weeks and magically get the body you want. And the reason people think that is you have these stupid transformation things, which are rigged. Guys who are already in shape, they get out of shape, they eat McDonald's every day. I was actually offered to do that myself. I turned it down because I do not want to do that. Someone wanted me to gain like 30 pounds of crap eating McDonald's every day. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then they wanted me to get back into shape just so I could do a transformation log. And I said, no, I'm not interested in doing it. I'm sorry. That's not fitness. And that's not what I want to do, but we see people do that all the time. And it's a ruse. So don't believe it. And then you hear people say, oh, but this actor got into shape. It's genetics. These actors are blessed genetically. You think these actors are just some random dude they picked up off the street to do an action role? No. Sylvester Stallone, The Rock, all these guys that you see in these action movies, they have God-given genetics to put on muscle and be fucking ripped. And that's how they're doing that role, those movie roles. They're not guys who act in drama movies. They act in action movies for a reason. What's the next topic, Matt?
Well, it's a good transition talking about what steroids will do for you, what they won't. I'm going to summarize this the best I can. It's a hefty steroid cycle. So, Steve, I'd like your opinion because you know a lot about steroids. And then I want to hear Trevor, too, because I know at a young age, Trevor ran some pretty aggressive cycles. I want to hear if he ever got in anything like this. But so this guy, he's just asking yes or no, is this okay? And it's a 6-month cycle. So he's got it split into two goals. It's kind of like, gain mass for 12 weeks and then recomp for 12 weeks. So what he wants to run test E, 600 milligrams a week, weeks 1 through 24, straight through. Then weeks 1 to 10, he's going to run DECA 300 milligrams per week. And then he's going to let that ride out in his system for 2 weeks. Then at week 12, he's going to pick it up with Tren E, 400 milligrams per week, and run that from 12 to the end. He's going to run Arimidex, 0.25 milligrams every other day on cycle for estrogen control. And he's going to run HCG from 500 IUs to 1,000 from weeks 4 right through to 26. So 2 weeks after his cycle ends, that's when he's going to run that until. This is the interesting part. He's calling this his 10-week recovery phase. So the 10 weeks is split into two different kind of cycles here. The first 6 weeks, he's going to run D-ball, 10 milligrams per day, to help him keep gains. He's going to run Nova, 20 milligrams per day, and Clomid, 50 milligrams per day for the full 6 weeks. And he's going to run the HCG, same dose before, and he's going to run that from week 3 to 6 of this range. And then the next 4 weeks of his recovery, he's just going to run Clomid and Novadex. So the Clomid's going to be 100, 100, 50, 50. Nova is going to be 40, 40, 20, 20. So I don't know if you got all that. It's pretty intense. It's a really, really long cycle. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, that's just one of the most absurd things that I've read. But here's the thing. We see people do this stuff all the time. The first thing, let's get the terminology right. If you're going to call it a cycle, that's not cycling. That's 6 months on and then doing like a 6-week PCT or whatever. I mean, that's not cycling. Cycling is time on plus PCT and then time off. So hypothetically speaking, this guy thinks that he can stay on steroids for 6 months and then run a 4-week PCT of a bunch of Nova and Clomid, and like magic, that's going to cause him to recover. The reality is that he's going to have a very difficult and long road to recovery. It will probably take him a full year to recover from that. So to me, that's not cycling. I think it's absurd. And he would get far better results, and he would protect his health far better with just doing a normal 12-week cycle, a real cycle, and then running a PCT, a proper PCT for 6 to 8 weeks, and then coming off, running blood work, making sure he's recovered, and then a few months down the road, then he can run another cycle, and he would get year over year superior gains in doing this. But we see guys do this shit all the time. I mean, people run gear year round at absurd dosages, and then they just run a bunch of HCG and run a bunch of Clomid and Novadex, and then they think they're recovered, but they never recover. They just basically blow up their HPTA. So, we're seeing this more and more, and it's just the way it is. I mean, people just, there's too easy access to steroids, and everyone wants the easy way out. So they just want to do it this way. But eventually it's going to catch up to you.
Matt, I'll be dead honest. I stopped listening after you started talking about like the 7th compound. Okay, first of all, it's more than necessary. Second, it's a waste of money. This would almost be like a new cook being like, okay, I'm going to make the best dinner ever. So they go to the grocery store, they get some chicken breast, and they're like, what am I going to season this chicken breast with? And they go to the spices and they get oregano, they get garlic, they get cinnamon, they get black pepper, they get cocoa powder, they get allspice, they get nutmeg, they get chili powder, they get cumin, they get Chinese allspice. They get all of them. They think, okay, I'm going to put in all these spices and it's going to be the most amazing thing ever. Your recipe is going to end up disgusting and it's not going to work because you're adding way too many things that don't go together. You know, you want to stack maybe two, maybe three, at the most, maybe four different steroids that work synergistically together. Keep it simple. When you add everything but the kitchen sink, it's just going to be a total disaster. You know, if you really want an effective cutting cycle, you know, you could do Tren and EQ, something like that. With the Tren, you know, you get a lot of androgens. Then with EQ, you get an anabolic. And then if you're doing a bodybuilding show or a photo shoot, which it kind of sounds like this guy was preparing for, the last 8 weeks, you could add in Masteron and Winstrol. You know, really, really simple. You know, maybe do like a 12-week test and EQ cycle. Sorry, a 12-week Tren and EQ cycle. And then the last 6 to 8 weeks, add in Masteron and Winstrol just for the hardening and cosmetic effects. That's going to give you way, way better results. So take things back to simplicity. You know, simplicity is what works. It would almost be like going to train chest and doing every single chest exercise there is. It would be counterproductive. You know, instead, maybe start with some heavy incline barbell press. After that, maybe do some flat dumbbell bench press. Then you can maybe do some chest flies, maybe some pec deck, maybe some cable crossovers as a finisher, something like that, you know. Pick maybe 3, 4, at the most 5 exercises, and that's all you need. Matt, topic number 4.
Yeah, just before I move on, I can guarantee you this guy will get gyno if he runs this. He's running test for 24 straight weeks, and then after that, he's running D-ball for 6 weeks, plus all the HCGs running. I don't care how much AI you're using. I guarantee you, if you're on wet steroids for 30 weeks straight, you'll get gyno. It's going to happen. There's no way around it. So the other topic, this is the next steroid topic we have.
You want to know the most ironic part, Matt?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have money to pay for the gyno surgery because he spent all of his money on steroids.
Exactly. That's the way it goes. Trevor, this is a good one for you because I the amount of people you've trained, I bet you've dealt with people like this plenty of times. So this guy writes in asking for help. He's been running Tren A 100 milligrams per day. And on his second week, he's feeling really depressed and it's getting worse. And he's wondering if it's the Tren, if he should drop it, if he should replace it. Kind of what advice we'd give somebody like that. For me, I know if somebody is prone to either depression or anxiety are the two big ones, Tren's probably the last thing I'd recommend. It does funny things to people mentally, and you don't want to be stuck where it can, you know, it'll really escalate and really elevate those feelings that you can have. And if you suffer from depression, the last thing you want is for it to get worse. But Trevor, like, have you ever trained anybody that's been, you know, had a history of depression or anxiety and tried to run Tren?
I'll first talk a little bit about steroid derivatives. So trenbolone is a nandrolone derivative. Deca is a nandrolone. NPP is also a nandrolone. Deca and NPP are actually the same thing, just different esters. Nandrolones raise prolactin levels in the body. Prolactin is a hormone that is heavily involved with emotion and also your sense of feeling good and hormones like dopamine and serotonin. So how the male body works is that when you ejaculate, prolactin goes up, then prolactin goes down. And when prolactin goes down, dopamine increases. And dopamine is your feel-good hormone. It's the hormone that releases when you win the lottery, you score good on a test, your favorite hockey team wins a game. Dopamine is your body's feel-good hormone. So prolactin and dopamine are in oppositions. So when you have sex, you ejaculate, prolactin skyrockets, and then it drops down and then you feel really good. That's why you feel so good after sex. You don't actually feel good during the ejaculation. It's immediately after the ejaculation that you feel really, really good. Now, nandrolones anandrolone derivatives like tren raise prolactin levels in the body. For the average person, this is something they wouldn't really notice because they normally had healthy levels of dopamine. So if their dopamine levels dipped a little bit, it wouldn't be a big deal. It's kind of like someone who's really, really wealthy. If you took $40 out of their wallet, they wouldn't even notice, right? But a homeless person, if you took $40 out of their wallet, they would notice that because they have no money. So if you suffer from depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, anything like that, if you know you suffer from these things, do not use nandrolones or nandrolone derivatives. It's just a bad idea. It's going to cause your symptoms to be even more severe. Now, this person basically said, hey, I'm 1 week into this tren ACE cycle. I'm starting to notice that my depression side effects are getting a lot worse. Should I drop the tren? My answer is yes. Tren ACE has a half-life of 2 days. It takes 4 times a steroid's half-life for it to reach full blood hormone levels. 2 times 4 is 8. So if you're experiencing these side effects at a week, the tren is only fully kicking in now. The side effects are going to get even worse. So drop the tren. If you're suffering from depression, you do not want to be using nandrolones. A much better cycle for you would be something like test and primo, maybe. You could do test and anavar. You could do test. I was going to say EQ, but EQ can also cause anxiety in people. I'd maybe just run test, maybe like test and anavar, something like that. You basically would not want to run nandrolones. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, you missed probably the most important one there for the dopamine thing, and that's food. When you bite into like a pizza or a cheesecake or you drink a Coke, I mean, not for us, but I'm saying a normal person, they get that, you get that feel good sensation from eating food, but it's not the food that's making you feel good. It's the dopamine. That dopamine rush.
Do you know why they add MSG to food?
I think we discussed that before. Yeah, so you eat more of it.
They add MSG to food because it skyrockets your dopamine levels.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely the case.
It literally makes you addicted to that food because it's just like recreational drugs. You know, when you do a line of heroin or a line of coke or whatever, sorry, an injection of heroin or a line of cocaine, dopamine levels skyrocket, and then you get addicted to that because your body thinks, okay, if I want to feel good, I do heroin, I do cocaine. Food companies are adding MSG into our food to literally make you addicted to it, because then you eat that food, you feel good. Anytime you're feeling sad, your brain is going to subconsciously think, oh, I should eat that food because it makes me feel good. Steve, go ahead.
The thing with tren, though, that makes it really, really a tough situation is not only the dopamine roller coaster, but it's also the androgen. You're getting the androgens pumped in as well. That's why tren is the relationship killer. Because when you're on tren, you feel like you want to kind of like, it makes you sexually very different. It makes you think differently. So, and when you're having sex on tren, Trevor was mentioning after you ejaculate, your prolactin goes up because prolactin puts you through that refractory period of when you want to have sex again. Prolactin, you'll lose your interest in sex. You'll lose interest in the girl. That's why after you have sex with a chick and you have a one-night stand, the next day you don't want to have anything to do with the girl. Well, that's because the prolactin went up. So you lose interest in sex and that girl, and you want to push her away. Here's the thing, though, about it. That tren, it's the aggression, it's the androgens and the anabolic effects of tren. It's 5 times more androgenic and anabolic than testosterone. On paper, is that real world? I don't know if it's real world, but I can tell you that whatever it may be 2 times or 3 times more, whatever the real world number is, not what on paper, but you feel so much different on tren. It's definitely a relationship killer. It'll cause you to crave things that you don't usually want to crave. So it's really something you don't want to mess with. like Trevor said, if you have a depression issue, if you have a sex addiction, if you have any type of addiction, it can really, really play with your mind and cause you to kind of seek that dopamine release and turn you into a little, you know, a different person in a lot of cases. So you want to be very careful. It doesn't take much of Tren to do this, because I've run Tren maybe 6 or 7 times in my life. I've run it low dose, moderate dose, high dose. No matter how much dose you run, it's going to affect you. So it's definitely something you want to not make a habit of running for that reason. So, you know, that's my opinion on it, but, Tren is an awesome compound. It really is. I hit personal records on Tren, but it also has its negatives, and, it's not something that I like to mess with very often.
So we have 2 more topics that we'll try to cover quick. Our next topic was, we had a listener question asking if there have ever been long-term studies done on steroids or SARMs. No, there hasn't been. Long-term studies are very expensive to run. The longer the study, the more money cost. Pharmaceutical companies only want to run the study as long as they need to in order to get the drug deemed safe by the FDA so they can sell it. That's the only reason they're running this study. Most studies done on pharmaceuticals, whether they be steroids, performance-enhancing drugs, cholesterol medication, blood pressure medication, anything like that, are about 90 days. If after 90 days there are no side effects observed, the FDA 99.9999% of the time will say, okay, the drug is fine to sell. Again, all the studies done on SARMs and steroids are done in, you know, people with muscle wasting diseases like HIV and cancer or seniors. So it wouldn't even correlate to, you know, a healthy adult male. And no studies have been done on stacking these compounds together. So if you look at a study that looked at Anavar supplementation in HIV patients, first of all, you're probably going to be stacking the Anavar with test. Second of all, you don't have HIV. And third, you're at a way higher body weight. You're exercising. So the answer is, all the studies done on this stuff, you can read them, but they're kind of useless for your purposes. You'd be much better off getting feedback from other steroid users, posting questions on the forums, things like that. Steven and Matt, what are you guys' thoughts?
Well, we don't just see that though with steroids or SARMs. We see this with other drugs that bodybuilders use, like Aromasin or Letro or Novodex or whatever. I'll give you an example. Some YouTube guru, I saw a video he did, and he's like talking about how Novodex is the best thing for estrogen because there was a study done and it showed this, it showed that. The study was actually done on old men who had high estrogen, okay? It wasn't done on guys who use steroids. It wasn't done on gym rats. It wasn't done on guys, you know, young guys or middle-aged guys. It was done on just old guys with high estrogen. So it doesn't apply to us. So again, these studies, you can, you know, take the Ian McCarthy approach to this, okay, which is look at these studies, which don't even apply, or you can do what Trevor said, is that utilize the forums, utilize the experience of other people and spread the knowledge and gain the knowledge. And that's how you learn about this stuff. So, the, you know, these studies, that's the problem with these studies, is that they're not done on gym rats. I just had an argument with a guy on the forum the past week, because he's talking about someone posted blood work and they had high creatinine levels. And I told the guy, I'm like, look, what's a normal level for that, okay, is someone who is a couch potato. That's the range, but it doesn't apply to weightlifters because we're breaking down and repairing muscle on a day-to-day basis. So for you to get an accurate number, you'd have to stop weight training for like 2 or 3 weeks. This way your muscle aren't repairing themselves and getting broken down. So you can't look at, you know, these types of things without remembering that we are not normal human beings. We are gym rats. We have a different, we should, you know, are medically, we have a different situation. If you go to any doctor, 99% of them will say, oh my God, you have kidney disease. You don't have kidney disease. I've had high creatinine levels for 20 years because I have been lifting weights for 20 years with maybe a 2-week break was my longest break. So, you know, that's the problem with the medical industry, and that's the problem with studies.
The problem with these drugs and these compounds too is, you know, in the bodybuilding world, they're not being used for their intended medical purposes. You know, Novadex was a great example. The guy is talking about, you know, how it's great for estrogen control, everything else. Well, it's actually a breast cancer drug. You know, yes, it does control estrogen. And when you're a man using it in a steroid cycle, it's going to do a certain thing. But you're not going to read a medical study about a woman taking Novadex to help with breast cancer. You know, it's not going to help you at all. So really, you know, a lot of the studies, there are no benefits. There are some benefits, you know, but you have to remember that just because a study, you know, leans one way doesn't mean you're going to react that way. Everybody responds differently. You hear guys, you know, on cycle, take Trend, for example, it's perfect one. Some guys have crazy libido, crazy, you know, boners all day long. And then the next guy will tell you he's got no libido and can't get it up. You know, they're running the same compound, but their bodies are just reacting differently. You know, and then the last thing I'll say, and then, you know, I can be quick here, is I've worked in sales for a long time. It's very easy to take any report, any study, any number, and make it say what you want it to say. You know, I can take anything and I can make it say two exact opposite things. It's really not hard to do. So guys, a lot of times will look at these studies and word it a certain way just because, you know, they're going to do something they want to do and they just kind of want that verification or validation. You know, I'm going to do it anyway, but please tell me it's okay to do it. So again, just do as much research as you can, talk to as many people as you can. And that's really the best way to do it instead of, you know, just trying to decipher these studies online.
I think another reason too is that if someone's like a YouTube star, he wants to gain subscribers. He wants to, you know, make more money off of the ads he's posting on his YouTube videos. So I think he tries to cite references knowing that they're irrelevant just to make himself sound smart, you know, because it's like, I'm talking about letrozole and then I cite these, you know, studies and stuff like that. It makes me sound really scientific and like I know what I'm talking about. But if you actually look up the studies, they're totally irrelevant. But I think that's why they're doing it. It's kind of like kind of sell the sizzle, you know, because they want to get subscribers. The more subscribers, the more people who watch the videos, the more money they make when they monetize their YouTube videos. That's actually how YouTube works, is when you see that ad at the beginning of the video, YouTube and the person uploading the video, they basically split the cost that that company pays to put that ad on there. So that's how YouTubers make their money, is the more views they get, the more money they get when they monetize their videos. So our last topic, we'll just shoot this one off quick. We had a listener question. He wants to get some new music suggestions. Perfect timing, because tomorrow we have the number one Christian rapper, I Am Landry K. He'll be the guest on the podcast. He's one of my best friends. It's kind of crazy. He started rapping 7 or 8 years ago, and I saw him, you know, kind of start from the bottom, and now he's on sold out tours and everything. He's going to give me some music so that if you listen to the next episode, if you like some of the sample bits that I play, I will edit into the show, I can send you some of his songs. If you're looking for stuff to listen to, I really like the BBC One Essential Mixes. They're 2 hours long. So if you like electronic music, pretty much every major electronic artist, you know, like Bauer, Armin Van Buuren, Tiesto, they've all done BBC One Essential Mixes. So if you just Google BBC One Essential Mix, free download, you'll be able to find thousands of them. Steve and then Matt, what are some things you're listening to during your workouts?
What I do, I have Sirius satellite radio in my car. So when I'm driving around, I kind of flip. I have like 10, 12, 15 stations I listen to. And there's all kinds of genres of music and stuff. So you just flip, I just flip through, and it'll tell you if you like the song, it'll tell you the name and the artist. So I just kind of text myself the name, and then I come home. I go online. This is a good trick that you guys can do to save money on downloading music, is you can go on YouTube, find the song you like, and then you go, you Google YouTube to MP3. And then there's different sites that you can take that YouTube link and basically turn it into an MP3 link, download it onto your computer for free, and then you can put it on your device. So that, you know, that saves you having to spend 99 cents or whatever on iTunes or whatever. So that's a good trick. But that's pretty much what I do. Just if I like the song, I'll put it on. If it's, I like to listen to songs that kind of are, you know, fun, positive while I work out. I'm not like into heavy metal. I'm not into like rock or anything like that. But I mean, if that's what gets you pumped up and that's what gets you excited for the gym, then listen to it. Everyone has different tastes in music. So it just depends. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I switch it up all the time because I like all different types of music. It kind of depends on my mood. Lately, I usually just stream on Spotify. I'll just listen on there. And I found this one that's a Tupac and Biggie mixed together, and I love it. Like, I could go for some, you know, 90s hardcore hip hop anytime when I'm in the gym. But then there'll be days where, you know, I'll think, you know, I kind of want something from my past, you know, when I was in college or something will make me feel good. And then just as many times, like, I love reggae, which is, doesn't sound like normal training music, but, you know, it makes me, like, I feel like I'm in a good mood. You know, it makes me think of being out in the sun, you know, on a vacation or something. And then when I'm in a good mood, then I have good workouts. So, you know, I just switch it up all the time. My wife loves country. And if we're ever, you know, together somewhere and that's what's on, then I'll kind of get into that for a little while. So then I'll go through, you know, a few workouts. I'll listen to that and then I'll switch it up again. So yeah, just don't be stale with the same thing. Switch it up and get a little energy boost.
Another great tip is if you have iTunes, which you probably do because you're listening to this podcast, go on the podcast section in iTunes and subscribe to a couple different music podcasts. I know Tiesto has a podcast. Hip Hop Daily is really good if you like kind of like upbeat hip hop. UKF Dubstep Music Podcast is really good if you like, the UKF Music Podcast is really good if you like dubstep. Pretty much all your favorite artists will have their own podcast. So you can subscribe, and most of them are about 90 minutes. Steve?
Yeah, Trevor, you like this. There's a French Canadian station on Sirius Radio. They have French Canadian music. So you would like that.
I'm probably the only Canadian who hates country. It's just never appealed to me. I have no desire to marry my cousin or drive a big truck. So this has been another good episode of Evolutionary Radio. Like I said, we have another episode tomorrow. I am Landry K. He's the number one Christian rapper. I'm really excited to get him on the show. Christian rap, it kind of sounds gay, but it's actually really, really good. You'll like it. It's some good stuff. So on next episode, the first 30 seconds are going to be Landry's song Pressure. So don't worry if you're listening to the podcast and it's a different intro clip. I did that on purpose. So you have the right podcast. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for my second co-host, Matt, who is known on the evolutionary.org forums as Masonic Bodybuilder, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life. Look good doing it.
Beep.